astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hello, baby.
Hello, baby.
Hello.
Hello again. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, friend.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, home.
Hi.
Yo.
G'day.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, guys.
Hackers Without Borders, the greatest podcast on the planet.
Guys, tune in. Great show. It's not just about football.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
So do you teach at like the local golf course in Milwaukee?
It's like it's a private country club. It's one of those like super high end, like
nice
rich. Yeah. The members there are insanely rich.
Rich
yeah,
assholes.
Exactly.
We have one of those right down the road from where I live. There's two.
Really?
There's Pine Ridge and there's Elmhurst Golf Course. They're almost like back to back on the same highway. One of them is like a quote unquote PGA Tour golf course.
Okay.
And the other one is where people like myself are allowed to play. So you give private lessons, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I teach mostly members there. I'll teach non-members, but most of my teaching is members. I mean, I would say teaching is like part of my job because I'm really busy running the golf course itself.
Oh, yeah.
And we have like someone whose only job is to teach. So I would say I don't teach a ton, but yeah, it's definitely part of my job. I get private lessons to some members, like, and it's just random. Like there's lawyers, doctors, all kinds of stuff, all kinds of rich people. It's fun.
So would you consider yourself a golf pro or a groundskeeper?
A golf pro.
Okay.
My title is actually head golf professional.
There you go. Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. That's pretty nifty. My title is chief bottle washer. I own my own business. So I do everything. I do everything. Today I was answering phones and paying bills. Tomorrow I'll be washing dishes. Oh no, I own a landscaping business, right? So
okay.
We're located a little bit north of you. We're in Manitoba.
Okay.
And we haven't had that much snow either. But our winters kind of are about the same.
Yeah, roughly, about the same.
Roughly Remembrance Day to roughly Easter. Give or take. Some years we go a little bit, a couple of years ago, they were golfing all the way until the second week of December. And then, you know, 3-4 years ago, middle of October, snow came. That was it. Season's over.
That sounds like here.
Right.
We had some of like the public golf courses opened up like about a month ago here. We've had a warm winter. So
those hackers, of course, the crap holes, the places with the really crappy fairway, they're all open.
Yeah,
I
mean, basically, well, they're really not that bad. They're just the ones that are kind of owned by the city of Milwaukee. And
yeah,
I mean, so Milwaukee
terrible.
Does a good.
They're
not
just
bad.
Terrible. They're just
Milwaukee
you
does.
Say
a good,
it. You
no, they're not that. They're not that bad. I mean, some of them are terrible, but some of them aren't that bad. That Milwaukee does a pretty good job with their golf courses. But yeah, so they've opened up, but now we're like. Kind of, we flipped almost back to winter here.
Yeah, the snow came again, I heard.
Yeah, 6 inches of snow on Friday. It's all gone already because it rained the entire day yesterday.
Nice.
But the weather's just kind of cold and dreary for the next few weeks.
Yeah, we've got a few more days of this below freezing, and then it's supposed to go above freezing, and it looks like that's about it. We're going to get into our season. So you're the golf pro. Listen, I am a hacker. I like to play military golf where,
Left,
I
right,
work
left,
left,
right.
right, perfect. You know all the jokes,
Oh, I
perfect.
do.
So now for those people that are just starting out, how important are shoes, footwear, the golf with the spikes?
I would say pretty, I wouldn't say, like, I would say it's important to have some grip. Like, because if you just have tennis shoes on and your feet are slipping all over the place, if it's wet, it's not going to work. It's important to have some kind of grip on your shoe. A lot of the companies now kind of make these, like, they're called spikeless golf shoes. They're more stylish. They don't look like your grandpa or whoever playing golf at some old country club. Like, they're good looking shoes, but they have some grip to them. They have some kind of spikes on the bottom that don't twist off. So I'd say it's important to have some kind of golf shoe to start. I
And
mean,
then
it's
what about the glove? Is that just formal wear? Is
the glove
that
is really personal preference. I mean, for me, I have trouble functioning without a glove. Like, I li use it for grip, especially during the summer. Like, I'll change gloves out so often during the summer because I need that extra grip, because I don't know if I have kind of a little bit of a weak grip strength or something, but the club will slip out of my hands. So the
You're
glove
one of
is
those
important.
guys. You're
The
one of those
glove
guys.
is
Look
It's I don't think it ever actually has slipped out of my hands, but it's definitely slipped. Oh no, it's gone flying out of my hands during a rainstorm before. But I feel like
Oh.
that happens. But the glove's important because for me, because I use it really to grip the club, but some people don't need it. It really depends.
So when you're getting brand new golfers, somebody just walks up, they're like,
Yes.
listen. Usually, you're going to hear a story like, okay, listen, my spouse has been playing this. Now I'm being dragged into this godforsaken game that's going to make me feel fantastic for 2 holes, but terrible for 16. What is the very first thing that you teach somebody?
The grip.
Yeah. And are you
Grip.
like a baseball grip? Are you the over the pinky over the index?
I really don't. I go with all you can. I do a overlap or an interlock grip. I interlock my pinky. Oop. Uh-oh. Interlock my pinky and my forefinger. I say I don't care if you, because there's basically three grips. There's the baseball grip, there's the interlock, there's the overlap. I don't really care which one you use as long as you have some elements to the grip that are correct, meaning the club is gripped in your fingers and not in your palm. As long as you have the club in your fingers so you can cock your wrist, I really don't care which grip you use. I think people may start with the baseball and then they might work up to the overlap or the interlock. It's really about what kind of feels comfortable, even though golf grip's uncomfortable at first, but it's more so getting down. Getting the club in the right position in your hands and not having it so you can't cock your wrists and the club face is wide open. And yeah, so grip is, yeah, that's the first thing.
And then the second is how to purchase golf balls at a discount rate.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty much.
I ask these questions because like if I go out to a regular course, I'm probably going to shoot low 90s, high 80s, depending on the day. I don't have any rhyme or reason to my golf game whatsoever. It is great one day and terrible the next, and I can't tell you why. I'm one of those guys. I did suffer at the hands of a joke of my father-in-law one time when I threatened that I was going to drown myself in one of the water traps at the golf course, and he said, "I don't think you can keep your head down that long." I'm good and I'm bad at it. What kind of advice do you give those hackers and slasher guys out there?
Oh God. I mean, the thing is it sounds bad, but really like the only way people to get better is a little bit of extra practice. I mean, if you kind of do the same thing over and over and just play your weekend game and it's just going to kind of keep to be the same usually, you kind of maybe have to get a lesson and maybe have a little bit of an improvement plan if you want to get better. But if you're happy with just how it is, just go out and have fun. I mean, it's not like it's not a big deal. And I mean, even I have good days and bad days. Like it happens.
You heard it here first, folks. Matt says go out there, drink as much beer as you'd like, and just keep.
Oh, I do that all the time.
You can't consider it a sport if you're allowed to get high and drunk during.
Well,
the
that's the
of
thing
it.
Is, I'm always questioning if golf is really a sport because I'm like, I have been drunk off of my ass
right.
Some of like best rounds I've ever played. Like right. I've played some great rounds where I'm like, I wouldn't be allowed to drive a vehicle right now, but I'm out here and shooting. But I'm out here shooting a 67 and I can barely fucking stand up. Like,
see, I shot a 67 once and then we had 9 more holes to go. Right. Like just terrible. But I will tell you, I enjoy the game. And like you said, I don't think if it is too much of a sport, if I'm allowed to get just completely whacked to the heck out of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And it's still, more, be, it's, still be good.
It's a, I guess it's kind of a, it's an activity. The way I look at it, okay, so on the PGA Tour, those guys, that's a sport. Like, they're playing a sport. They're athletes. They're all well-trained at their best. The weekend golfers, like, I mean, I play tournaments and stuff, so I guess I can kind of consider that a little bit of a sport. But I even sometimes drink during tournaments, and that's fine. I play with other people that also drink during tournaments. It helps the nerves a little bit when you're not used to playing competitive and you go out and... It kind of helps to maybe have a few high noons, nothing too crazy during the round. So I'm like, is this really a sport if I can get drunk and I might be a little bit better at it when I'm buzzed than I am when I'm sober? Like, I don't think that should be the case. Like, I played hockey for 20 years and I definitely would not have played hockey better drunk than I was sober. Like, no, I would have been probably throwing up in the corner.
I so, can't like, tell you from personal experience, it's not a good idea to do yellow microdot and play hockey as well.
Oh, God. I've been high as hell at hockey practices before, and it's bad. Like, I remember one time, like, because I played high school hockey, and I remember one time we got super high before practice, and I think my coach was yelling at me, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, so I was just, like, not, like, there. So I'm like, no, if I can't, that's a sport. That you have to be, you should probably be sober to play hockey. Golf? You don't have to be sober. You might be better off a little bit higher, a little bit drunk, or a lot of bit higher, sometimes a lot of bit drunk.
Just a little zip just to take the edge off. That's
exactly.
You know, yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Swing juice or whatever you want to call it.
So you live in Milwaukee. Have you gone to a lot of Lambeau Field games?
I've been to Lambeau probably, maybe 15 times or so.
15 times. Okay. So you've been to quite a few games.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Wisconsin. Honestly, when I lived in Wisconsin until I was 17, and then I moved to Colorado, then Florida, then New Jersey, and then back to Wisconsin. I didn't go to a ton of games growing up because playing hockey, I was so busy during the winter. Like, we used to play, like, I was on teams where we'd play like 50 games winter, so like there was plenty of times like I was playing. I had a hockey game during games. Like, I remember some of the biggest Packer games we had games during, and I only caught part of them. Like, I still remember the Mike Vick when he went crazy at Lambeau, and I think it was like 2004 or something. I missed that game because I had a hockey game. So growing up, I didn't go to a ton of games.
You got lucky; you didn't have to watch that.
I know it was bad. I remember coming out and like
he's still running. He's still running on that defense.
Catching the tail end of the radio and hearing it's 34-7 or what. I think that was the final. But yeah, so like I missed that game. I still remember, I think it was 90, the Jerry Rice fumble game. I missed the first three quarters of that game because of hockey. But I still remember the fourth quarter, even though I was only like 11 years old, because freaking Jerry Rice fumbled.
Yeah, he never fumbles too.
Yeah,
he fumbled too.
That day. And then the TO catch, I remember getting to a TV in time in the fourth quarter, but that was me growing up. So I didn't go to a ton of games, long story short. And then I was out of the state for a while. But then when I moved back in like 2018, I started going to a lot of games. I usually go to like two or three a year. I have a friend who's from Green Bay, but lives in the Jacksonville area, who I met when I was working down there, who has season tickets, but because he's in Jacksonville, he maybe only goes to one or two games a year. So I'll usually buy two or three games off him at season at face value.
Nice.
So that makes it
easier. Has he got good seats?
Yeah, he has. He's like in the 30-yard line.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with that.
Great. 30 rows up in the 30-yard line. Really good seats. So
there isn't too many bad seats at Lambeau.
No, there's like no bad seats at Lambeau.
Well, maybe the toilet seats.
Even like the I've sat in like the 700 or the 600 section way up top, the new section. And
yeah,
it's a little different, but you do have actual seats and cup holders, which is kind of nice. But yeah, I'd still rather be down in the bowl.
Our old stadium for CFL up here for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, it had concrete seats. You know, it was just benches. It was all just concrete, same that they made out of the stairs and everything. And then one year they decided, you know what, let's upgrade these areas. We'll put in metal railing seats because, in Canada, that won't be bad at all, especially when we're playing in fucking December. So our new stadium, actually, they've just got hard plastic seats and it's a nice stadium. Sort of looks like the Seattle Seahawks stadium with the way the roof is to try and, you know, amplify the crowd noise, that sort of thing. Listen, the Packers seem to be in a little bit of a standstill as we talk here today with the city of Green Bay. And
I saw that earlier.
What's that all about? What did you hear?
I haven't heard much. I've kind of heard it's a little bit of like a back and forth, like the Green Bay says they're not negotiating in good faith and the Packers say they stopped negotiating. So I was pretty busy today, so I didn't really have a chance to like pay too much attention to what was going on with it. But that's all I've really heard. And I mean, I also heard that they were stopping renovations that they had planned this winter because of it. So like, it's a big deal. Like, I don't think the Packers are going to leave Green Bay and the lease is at least another 9 years and could go into the like 2040s. But they're stopping lease negotiations is keeping them from completing their renovations this winter.
So what do you think it is? You think it's a couple of twisted city council members that maybe they're a little too uppity or something and they don't realize?
Or the mayor even.
The only reason that you go to Green Bay is because of the Packers?
Exactly. Or the mayor even. I don't know. I don't know enough about it to really have like a really strong opinion on it. Yeah. That's just what I heard today. And I mean, it could be something that the Packers are doing too, that the city of Green Bay doesn't but like
everybody wants the most amount of money, right? Everybody wants the most amount of money. And that's exactly how it's going to get shaken down, right? Somebody wants more money. Somebody's not getting enough money. Everybody thinks they're getting ripped off. This is how negotiations work.
And I think eventually it'll be fine. Like, nothing's going to happen. Eventually they'll figure it out.
Well, can you imagine if they did pick up and go and they were like, you know what? Fuck this. We're going to Milwaukee.
Oh God. That would be weird. I mean, I've lived in Milwaukee for 2 years now. So it'd be cool to have the Packers close, but no, I'd still rather, I like going up to Green Bay. So I hope they figure it out.
I'm sure that with the social media posts and, Mark Murphy coming out and saying, oh, they just seem to have left the negotiation table and, everybody saying, oh, it wasn't me, it's him. I'm sure that there'll be quite a few citizens phoning the mayor's office already.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Green Bay could exist without the Packers, but it would not be the same.
No. No, and that's it would just become every other small
it would
dairy
just become
town.
Appleton.
Yeah, every other dairy town that's throughout the Midwest, right? Or the Mideast.
Yeah, exactly.
Mideast.
I mean, it's a decent sized city, but I mean, it would just become like a bigger version of like the cities to the south that people stay in, like Appleton and cities like that. Like, it wouldn't be anything special anymore.
So, have you seen these new kickoff rules?
Yes.
So what do you know about the kickoff rules? It looks like, from what I can tell, it looks like they line up on our 40 and we line up on our 30 and nobody moves until Nixon catches it. And then it's giver.
Now, I watch not very much, but I mean, I watched this kickoff in the XFL and I thought it was interesting. I was intrigued by it when I saw it in the XFL. I think it was last year or 2 years ago. I mean, I didn't watch much of the XFL, but I saw the kickoff a few times. I think it could help us. I mean, well, it could help and it could hurt. I think Nixon is going to get a lot more returns, yeah, which is great, but it's also going to test our kickoff coverage, which
is gonna
at
be
times over the last few years has not been great. So it could be a double-edged sword for us. I think Nixon getting more returns, which he will, is going to help. He's going to be bringing everything out, and I think that could help us a lot. But I also can, on the other side, I'm worried about us stopping your team's kickoff coverage.
Oh, yeah.
Or especially other teams' kickoff teams, some of these returners that you can kind of just avoid by kicking it through the end zone. You're not going to be able to do that anymore.
No, and, you know, now it's like everybody and their dog is grabbing more running backs, more return personnel. Cordell Patterson was just signed.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, I saw Cordarrelle Patterson sign with the Steelers today. I'm like, yep, they want another they want a returner. So.
Right? Try and turn some points on that kickoff. You know, I enjoy the fact that the NFL is willing to adapt and change and make the game A, more exciting, and B, safer. At the same time, I'm watching a lot of these tackles, and you know, they say things like, "Oh, would have Sterling Sharp have succeeded in this NFL?" And I say, "Yeah, because back then the quarterback could ride him piggyback.
Right?
You know, there was no penalty then. Now the guy, right?
They banned. I mean, face masks were illegal then, but I mean, they're banning horse collar tackles. You can't hit high. Now they ban the hip drop tackle. I'm like, yeah, these guys in the old days, like Sterling Sharp, would probably be going for almost 2,000 yards a season right now.
Right.
Because the rules favor the offense so much, and they keep making more rules like banning the hip drop tackle that is favoring the offense even more.
You know,
how do you legally tackle anymore?
Well, and that's the thing that kind of eludes me a little bit, and it's kind of doing the same thing in hockey. You know, somebody on Twitter was like, would Wayne Gretzky have scored as many points nowadays in the NHL? And I would say, he would have scored twice as many. Now you can't hook the guy. You can't, those checks in the back from standing in front of the net, those are penalized all day now. And back then, that's what happened when you stood in front of the goalie. You got hacked.
Exactly.
You know, we watched many. I'm a Jets fan, of course, because I live up here right next to Winnipeg. And we watched many a career. You know, Paul Fenton, Brett Ashton, Paul McLean, Thomas Steen, all these great guys who had amazing seasons get cut short because of the cross check to the back all day long in front of the net. Now, somebody looks at them the wrong way and the ref's got his hand up and they're like, well, they call that a hooking penalty. It's like, that's not hooking. Hooking is when the guy's bleeding from the mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
You're an Avalanche fan?
Avalanche, yeah.
That's too bad.
I mean, I lived in Colorado for 8 years, but I think I was an Avalanche fan before. Like, I know I was an Avalanche fan before we moved to Colorado, because when I was in high school, I graduated from high school in 06. When I was in high school, my dad used to go back and forth from Colorado a lot, and we used to go out there every year. So I remember watching them in kind of the late 90s and not having a hockey team in Wisconsin. Like, I kind of like the Rangers growing up as a Wayne Gretzky, and then he retires, and I didn't really have a team. And I remember watching the Avalanche, like, win the Stanley Cup their first year after moving Quebec, and I was like, ooh, I kind of like this team. And then I started to have more connections to Colorado as I went out there with my dad. And yeah, that's how I became an Avalanche fan.
That's too bad about this season. Maybe next year for you guys, eh?
We'll see.
My Jets are finally playing up to potential right now. Yeah, last couple of games have not been very good. But who schedules a road trip? We play Friday night. Then after playing Friday night, we play Saturday at noon and then Sunday at noon. Like, I thought there was supposed to be 24 hours in between games. And meanwhile, they're like, okay, so you're going to play in Long Island on Friday. But don't worry, Saturday, you're in, you know, Florida. But, you know, since you're on the West Coast, you'll play LA the next night. And your plane's already late. So if you guys could hurry this game up. It's almost as if Bettman's like, oh, you guys are doing well this year? Let me adjust that for you. Let me fix that for you.
Yeah, you know, I've never
What do you think of this curse, the Bettman curse, about not having a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup since he's become president?
God. It's, I mean, I don't know how real it is, but I mean, it certainly is looking that way. Like, yeah, it's like what you said, he's screwing over your schedule. It's insane to me that a Canadian team hasn't won in that long. Like, but I don't know if it's just a coincidence or not, but with schedules like that, it might not be.
Well, you know, what pissed us off was Gary Bettman was up in Winnipeg, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks ago. And he was talking about the attendance in Winnipeg, and our arena holds about 16,000, and the attendance has been somewhere in the high 13,000s for most games. You know, we have a couple of games that sell out, but at the same time, it's $200 a ticket. You go with two people, now that's $400. And
that's
then
you got
parking, you got $18 beers. Before you know it, you're paying $600-700 for one night.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what if you don't take people on first dates to an NHL game? I mean, you're signing a mortgage payment over for this sort of thing, right? You better really like this girl if you're going to an NHL game.
Exactly.
You know, this better be somebody you can bring home to mom. But there's Bettman talking about our attendance. And one of us was in the crowd and he yelled out, "Hey, what about Arizona? How are they doing?"
Oh, God.
Arizona's like a high school hockey arena right now.
I know they're playing. I think they're playing in the University of Arizona State maybe right now. Like,
yeah. And it holds like 6,000 people or something. And they can't even sell that out.
They can't even sell that out. It's really bad.
And it's been like that for decades in Arizona. And Bettman's like, they'll work it out. We have one guy miss a game because his mom was sick. And Gary Bettman flies up to Winnipeg and talks about attendance. What the crap is this?
Exactly. he's not definitely. I mean, I don't know if there's any commissioner in sports right now I really like, but I definitely don't like him.
This is TJ Wims out of Las Vegas, Nevada.
This is Matt coming to you from Cincinnati.
Hey friends, this is Colton Moore from Central Illinois.
This is the Macho Man Randy Savage.
This is Shelley from Gwin, Michigan.
Bales of Hay, and I'm from Kansas City.
Hey, this is Jamie Cheesebutt. I'm from LA, California.
Hey everyone, this is Ella from Southern Cali.
This is Neebles from Chicago, Illinois, and you are listening to Packers Without Borders, the finest podcast in all the land.
Hi, I'm Andy. I'm listening to Packers Without Borders from Sheffield, England, and you're listening to the best podcast in the world.
It's time for Matt's Motivational Meaningful Moment.
The difference between outlaws and in-laws is outlaws are wanted.
This has been Matt's Motivational Meaningful Moment.
This is Yuri.
It's Jamie Cheesebutt.
TJ Wims.
Doran Stortergan.
Shelley.
It's Reed. Randy McGray.
Peter
Neebles.
It's Mick.
Amy.
Mel. Alex Brown.
Matt Stevenson.
What's up?
Matt Ramage.
Andrew Falk.
Matt Kuhneman.
It's Eric.
Bruce Banker.
Matt.
Matt Fraley.
Chris.
Chris McLeod.
The Macho Man Randy Savage.
Luke Zog.
Kristen.
Kimmy.
Coach Hahn.
Colton Moore.
Dave Robbins.
Kermit D. Frog.
Kelly Bruner.
Eric.
Luke Zog.
Jeremy.
Jamie Cheesebutt.
Jimmy. Bales of Hay.
Guys, tune in. Great show. It's not just about football.
I'll find a little queen and I know I can treat her right. What's your name, little girl? What's your name?
I sort of like Roger Goodell. The problem with Goodell is people really stick Goodell with, oh, well, you changed these rules or you suspended this guy. And it's like, well, actually, the rules committee changes the rules. And that's made up of, a representative from every team. And we vote and it's got to be at least 75%. So Goodell doesn't change the rules. Oh, well, you suspended this guy. Well, actually, there's a suspension like group of guys that go over this and they recommend it. And then I hand down the suspension. So he gets a lot of grief for things. He's like a figurehead, sort of like our prime minister, sort of like your president. They're there. They take the cannon fodder, but really they're not the guys pulling the strings. They're not the right. ones, you know, really doing things here. We all know
that makes sense.
It's the Illuminati. It's the Illuminati. Yeah.
No, it makes sense. I saw now there's a game on Christmas Day on a Wednesday. I'm like, how's that going to work? Like, I don't know.
Do we really need, I mean, I love NFL football, but adding another game, 17 games, you're like, okay, all right, well, we could do another game. That sort of screws up the schedule a little bit. I like the way it was at 16, and, you know, every 4 years you played everybody once, and every 8 years you played in every stadium once. Right,
exactly.
I absolutely love that idea, sharing it. Then you get to 17 games, and they're like, oh, that way everybody can play in Brazil once.
So yeah,
do we need to be playing in Brazil once?
Do we really need to be playing in Brazil? I don't know.
You know, us Canadian fans, when the Packers came up to Winnipeg and the Los Angeles or the Raiders,
it was such a
fucking debacle. Technically it's a Raiders home game. Okay, yeah. So the Raiders squad crew, they're all in charge of it, and the only way for Winnipeg to get the NFL to show up is if they just handed the keys over to the stadium and they left. It's like, okay, you know, please give her back to us in good shape. So the Raiders officials and NFL officials that were there went out there and they said, okay, we got to move these goalposts back, and then we got to repaint this and make this look like this. They do that. They sign off of it. It looks great. Both teams get off the field, get off the planes. They go onto the field, and right away the refs go, oh no, they can't play on this. It's like, what? You just signed off that it was okay. No, we can't have. And I was sitting there in the stands thinking to myself, I wasn't expecting to see Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams out here for 45 minutes or anything. But a couple of plays, that have been kind of cool. You know, here I am in my hometown, right? That would have been all right. They screwed that up so terribly. I mean, people were just booing in the stands, and the refs were like, hey, it's about player safety. You just finished telling us that it was okay to be played on. Like, we had a full week that we could have fixed it.
Exactly. Because we did, like, what, the 80-yard field, if I remember right? And
Yeah. It was terrible. They put pylons up. This is the out-of-bounds. It started looking like, you know, when you and eight of your buddies have had a couple of 2-4s of beer each, and you go, fuck it, let's get a game going. Okay, pass the lawn chair. That's touchdown.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, come on. This is millions and millions of dollars. The NFL is in the billions of dollars, you know, and they always treat us like second-class citizens, the Canadians. They're like, let's take this game down to Mexico where it belongs. It's like, you know, we're right here.
I know. I feel like they have games in Mexico City. I mean, the London games, the games in Germany, now a game in Brazil. I'm like, you could have a game in Canada, that'd be fine.
What's wrong with Toronto? Toronto's got a big enough domed stadium, the whole works, and it's all interchangeable. They could fix it up however they want. They're like, nah, fuck them Canadians. That's the NFL. No,
we gotta go to Brazil.
Brazil's where it's at.
Preseason game.
Have you seen the parades in Canada? They're nothing like the parades in Brazil. We're going to Brazil.
Exactly. I saw we might play in Brazil. I'm like, great. Just what we need, another international game to start the year too.
Just terrible. They shouldn't be on a plane for 13 hours to go someplace. You know, like, some of these road trips as it is are terrible for Green Bay. You get to Green Bay and it's like, oh, we're playing in San Francisco. It's like, that's a bit of a road trip.
Yeah, it's a pain to get to San Francisco or Miami.
Yeah. And what about these other teams like San Francisco who then have to play in Miami? Or New York that plays in Seattle.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we get the daylight savings time here where I live, and it screws with you for over a week.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are, you know, 3-4 hours, and it's like, oh, let's go to London. It's just a 6-hour time difference.
Yeah, it'll 6-hour time difference.
We're not going to have a team in London. There's never going to be an NFL team in London.
No, there's not.
Come on. Matt says to heck with it, and I agree with Matt.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, it's cool for, like, fans over there. I mean, there are a lot of football fans in England that's cool for, but, like, I don't know, maybe one game a year. They just keep adding more and more. It's like Jacksonville plays back-to-back weeks there now, I think, or they did last year.
Yeah, well, nobody likes to watch Jacksonville anyway.
That's true.
Even yeah, the old fans.
Yeah, I know. I lived out in Jacksonville for about a year, and yeah, there were Jacksonville fans, but there definitely weren't that many diehard fans.
No, no, no. And can you blame them? That team has been terrible, terrible for since most
of their life. David, since Mark Brunell left.
Yeah, since Brunell. I was going to say Garrard, but yeah, Brunell. You know, any of those guys.
Yeah, I guess they had a few good teams with Garrard, but yeah. Late 90s, early 2000s, they were pretty good. And then when they were an expansion team was when they were at their best.
Yeah.
They were really good for the first few years they existed. And then after that, it just went downhill.
Like, what is there to do down in Jacksonville? Is there a lot of whorehouses and stuff? Like, what?
I lived right almost on the ocean. So I just went to the beach a lot. There's a lot of golf courses.
Yeah.
A lot of golf courses and a lot of beaches.
Trump owns them all.
Oh, God. Thankfully, he doesn't own any in that area. But no, I lived in basically Jacksonville Beach, which was like the kind of the coastal town, which has all the really cool bars and restaurants and stuff. So I didn't live in Jacksonville. Jacksonville itself is kind of weird. Sketchy. It's sketchy for sure. There's Jacksonville weird, Beach is really nice.
Yeah.
So I lived in the nice area around Jacksonville.
So to sum it up, living inside of Jacksonville is sketchy. Living outside of Jacksonville is good.
Yeah, if you live close to the ocean, it's great. Yeah, you live minutes away from the beaches, it's great. I mean, I was...
Anywhere but in Jacksonville, he says.
Yeah, exactly. Jacksonville has some pretty... But then again, I live in Milwaukee, which is also a little bit rough and... areas here for sure.
Is there thieves that are out there looking for, you know, yeah, cheese, I mean, Milwaukee dairy products
typically or... comes in at, if you see those dangerous city rankings in America, Milwaukee's usually in the top 20.
You know, the city Winnipeg that I lived just outside of for 12 years, most of them consecutive, but for 12 years they were the murder capital of the world per capita.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
so you are...
and think about it. That includes like Iraq. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. You know. And every city in America.
Right. Like that's how terrible Detroit. It was for. Oh, yeah. No, Detroit. Yeah. Ah, that's nothing. Those Detroit folks, they don't have it rough. You got to come up to North Main Street in Winnipeg
and
see if you get out of your car. There's a reason that we moved out of there. It's cleaned up quite a bit. I mean, now it's just meth dealers and pimps, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, before there was coke dealers too.
Oh, yeah. Our thing in Milwaukee is definitely, there's a lot of gang violence in a good section of the city.
Oh, yeah.
And a good section of the city is just really, I mean, there's a lot of poverty in the north side of Milwaukee.
It always seems to be the north side. You ever notice that? And
whenever
you go to a city, they're like, don't go to the north.
Exactly.
Whatever you do.
The only city that's not like, because I spend a lot of time in Chicago, it's the opposite. Chicago's the south side. The north side's nice. Milwaukee, the north side is the area you want to avoid, and then the south side's fine. But then if you get by the lake in Milwaukee, then if you're on the north side by the lake, it's really nice. It's just the inland north side of Milwaukee is where you want to avoid here.
Where I live now, it's a small little farming community just outside of the city, real small. And here we have a sketchy gas station, and that's about it. You know, there's the nice gas station that's corporate owned, and it's got all the lights and everything lights up. And then there's like the local gas station. It's been here since 1908. And, you know, it half the time the fluorescent lights don't kick on and you can't tell, but if you can see inside, there's a guy watching TV, that means they're open.
Yep. Sounds about right. Usually I judge my neighborhoods on whether the gas stations have like the full like bulletproof glass and bars on the window or not.
Right. Yeah.
If they don't have that, the neighborhood's probably safe. If they do have the bars on the window and the full on bulletproof plexiglass where the cashiers, where you can only slip it through a slot, then yeah, you should probably be careful in that area.
Yeah, I that's It's funny that you say that, because when we're doing things like snow clearing and we're driving around, if you're in the south end of the city, you can pump your gas, go inside, pay for it, grab a drink and leave. If you're in the north end of the city, they need that money up front, slide it through the grate, and yep. we will hand you a receipt, and then we will turn the pump on for only that amount of money.
Exactly.
And while you're out there pumping, you're always looking around. Some guy gonna come up behind me. Listen, before I let you go, I got a couple of questions I want to talk to you about with the Packers here. First okay. question I have for you is, what do you think the number one draft need is this year?
Number one draft need. I still think it's secondary. I would say corner or safety. I would say probably corner, safety, or a nickel is my, I mean, I put all three of those kind of in the number one need. Number two is definitely offensive line depth. Number one, I think, is secondary, and I'd say corner or safety.
Jordan Love, they're talking about his extension. Goot the other day came out and talked about how great Jordan Love's been the last 4 years, how he's going to feel real comfortable handing him this extension. There's talks, of course. There's the rumor mill. He's going to make $200 million. He's going to make $50 million a year. What do you think the extension looks like, your best guesstimate?
I'm going... I'd say either 4 years, 200, or 5, 250.
Wow, that much, eh? $50 million a year?
Yep. I think he's going to get $50 million a year, but I think it's going to be a typical Packers contract where the cap hit in year one is not very big, and then it might be backloaded a little bit. There might be a void year, and then we might be able to renegotiate in a few years to push that cap and just kind of keep pushing it down. But I think it'll be around the, I would say 4,200 is around what I think he'll get.
And I, you know, you're not the only person that has said this. A handful of people have come out and said that it's going to be at least $50 million. And I'm going to say the same thing to those handful of people that I'm about to say to you. And that's, you realize he hasn't won a Super Bowl yet.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
But I think that's, I think $50 million for quarterbacks isn't what it used to be. I think $50 million was absurd a couple of years ago. Now it's almost the going rate for a playoff winning quarterback.
Because Joe Flacco got eight.
I know. I think now it's close to 45, somewhere 45, 50. I mean, I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah.
It might. I think it's a lot of money, but that's what almost for a franchise playoff winning quarterback
sure.
that maybe even hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. Like, I mean, I think Dak Prescott's going to get more than that. And yeah. I don't think Love's any. I think Love's a better quarterback than he is, but he's probably going to get even more than that. So,
well, Jerry Jones likes to pay his superstars outrageous amounts of money and then have nobody to surround them. Hey, that's what he's used to doing.
Yeah, let's say 4,190, but like I said, it's going to be a typical Packers contract where there's going to be either an out after 2 years, there's going to be a way to extend it to lessen the cap hits down the road. I think Russ Ball will make it look like he gets a lot of money, but still make it work for the team.
Give him some kind of guaranteed $75 million, and he's only going to get 25 this year.
Cap hit might only be 25, but he gets all this. He might get $70 million up front or something like that. But his cap hit's only like 20 something. Like, I think that's what it's going to look like. It's going to be something I think that's actually going to free up cap space and not take up, but. His cap hits down the road will be huge, but then in 2 years we'll renegotiate and we'll do the usual song and dance that we always do.
It's always a mystery with the salary cap, and we have guests on all the time that will break down the salary cap, and I'm pretty sure I've got a good grasp of it. And then 2 weeks later, somebody else gets signed and they're like, oh yeah, we just guaranteed this guy $300 million. It's like, how is that even possible? Oh, well, there's a void and the turnover, and there's an Apple turnover, and there's so many of these different terms. And you're like, so when does it actually count for cap? Oh, 6 years after he dies. That's when it'll start counting. It's like, what?
It's insane what they've started doing. I mean, I follow people that are good with the salary cap. I mean, I don't have enough time to keep up with the salary cap. I'm way too busy, but I feel like I have a decent enough understanding from following people that are good with the salary cap to know that what we can do and what we can't do and how flexible we are and what we can make work. And I think, yeah, based on following the people I follow, that's kind of what I think it's going to be.
Well, you know, currently the Packers have about $25 million in cap space.
Yeah.
We've still got to sign all of our draft picks, 11 draft picks.
Yeah.
We've still got to figure out interior linebacker spot. We're missing an interior linebacker.
With yes, Devontae we are.
Campbell going. There's going to be some free agency pickups because we're not going to be able to satisfy all of our needs in the draft. Who knows? You know what? Who knows? Especially with Goot. Because last year I thought, oh no, for sure we got to get ourselves a couple of wide receivers. And after that draft, we don't need no stinking wide receivers.
Exactly.
We've got plenty. Moving on to the wide receivers, I got to ask you, who's the wide receiver that takes the leap forward this year?
That's a tough one. I want to say Christian Watson because I think he's the most talented of the bunch. I just hope he can stay healthy. If he stays healthy, it's him. If not, I could see Wicks taking a huge jump here too.
I see Wicks and Reed. I think, and you know, and I say this with heart, hat in hand, because Christian Watson's dad, he's been on the show a bunch. I'm actually doing another show with him tomorrow. We text each other back and forth. Tazeem is a great, great guy.
Yeah, he's a great follow on Twitter.
I'll tell you, it's time for Christian Watson. He's had some injuries. We've all seen this. We're understanding. We see what he could do when he's healthy. But like, this is the year. It's gotta culminate. Exactly. It's gotta be at least 11, 12 games. It's gotta be 3-4 games in a row, not this splash one game and then we don't see you for a month. You know, he can be that number one. I think that number one is going to fall back into Dobbs' hands again. Dobbs is that consistent.
He's the most consistent. He's like, he doesn't miss.
Yeah, exactly. He's like a thicker version of Devontae.
Exactly. You
know, he's got those super strong hands. He gets those contested catches. He can make those moves, but he's going to catch 90 passes for 1,000 yards, where Watson's going to catch 30 and hit 1,000 yards.
Yeah, exactly. He could, I mean, if he stays healthy, he could have like, I could see him catching like 60 or 70 passes for 1,200 yards.
Easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Easy.
If he stays healthy the entire year, he can be that guy. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of guys. It's so hard to pick which one is going to make the biggest jump because they all have so much talent. I mean, it's the biggest collection of young talent I remember having at receiver right now.
Well, if we look back, Brett Favre handed the team over to Aaron Rodgers with Donald Driver, JerMichael Finley,
Jordy
Nelson, Greg Jennings, and James Jones.
A lot of that was they were established talent.
Oh, yeah.
They were established at this point. I mean, that was the most talented group. This is a ton of young guys with kind of a lot of potential, so it's kind of hard to tell. They might have as much talent as that group did, but you just don't know until probably another year or two.
I think Wicks and Reed are going to really battle it out this year for top spot if Watson isn't healthy.
I agree.
We're going to see the Wicks and Reed show. And then, of course, we'll sprinkle in 6 catches a game to Romeo Doubs, and everybody goes ho-hum as he hits 1,000 yards.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Excellent, Matt. Let me tell you, it was nice to meet you. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
My ad is at MGD1084. I know it's kind of a generic ad, but that's just what it is. So MGD1084.
Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure. If you need any golf course lessons or training or free tickets, don't bother Matt. He says, don't go to the Wisconsin. The city ones are terrible in Milwaukee. No, absolute great advice for us terrible golfers that are still trying to stay around 80.
I don't know. High 80s, low 90s is not terrible. Trust me. I see terrible. That's not terrible at all.
I've played with terrible. And
we have members that are terrible that play 100 times a year and shoot over 100 every time. And I'm like, I don't know if I could do that.
As soon as I shoot 100 one time, I then get my ass to the driving range a couple of days a week. And I just get the club back in my hand. And I go back to, generally when I screw up, it's because I'm trying to steroid jerk that ball 300 yards, you know? And it's like, if you just swing through and just follow through. And I have to remember, one time I played against this guy, I was playing by myself 18 holes, and the club partnered me up with this other guy. He was like 85 or 83 years old, and he didn't have a shot that went over 10 feet in the air, and he probably didn't shoot anything that went more than 150 yards, but everything was dead on accurate.
Yeah.
And he shot an 85 that day. And I struggled and shot a 93. Of course, I had the towering shots that dropped, still dropping 20, 30 feet short, where his would roll up onto the green and he'd tap it in. And yeah, so I got to remember, trust the club, trust the muscle memory, and trust the weed. It's got you high enough.
Exactly.
You'll be playing well enough. Matt, you take care of yourself. We'll see you too, in the Twitterverse. And
sounds
I'll leave by saying, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my own.